Hi everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 185. Today we're going to be discussing Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 4, Episode 18, Where the Wild Things Are, and Angel, Season 1, Episode 18, 5x5. My name is Karen, I will be your host today, and I am joined by Mitch, Caitlin, and Kristen. Hi everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hola.
And if you would like to get in contact with any of us, please reach out through email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at re_watchable, this post on hypable.com, or rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And please remember to keep them spoiler-free for our newbies. Speaking of newbies, Mitch and Kristen are the new ones, and Caitlin and I are the super fans. So let's start off with fun facts, and let's make the newbies go first. Mitch, you got a fun fact for us?
Yeah, my fun fact is the same one that I shared with you guys before we started recording. My soul has been ripped out by the Halloween people taking Lyft rides. So, yeah, I'm pretty tired today.
Do you see a lot of cool costumes, though?
I did. I saw the coolest one for Bane, from Batman. I always like a good Bane costume. And he had the voice down. He even put on the mask in the car. It was kind of creepy, just to, like, show me it. And he did it so perfectly. He sounded like Tom Hardy. It was amazing. It blew my mind.
That's really cool. My dad likes to send me cool Halloween costumes and cosplays all the time, and he just sent me one of the Demogorgon from Stranger Things.
Oh, wow.
And somebody, like, it's animatronic. Like, the face opens up, and you can see the teeth underneath, and then it closes again. Like, it was crazy good.
Now, speaking of animatronics, Karen, there was a worse one that I saw, because someone had a clown on their back. And they were walking along like nothing was happening, but as they're crossing the crosswalk, they're walking in front of my car, they have the clown on animatronics sitting there staring at me as it's crossing the street. And I'm looking up, and I do a double take, and I'm like, there's a clown staring at me. But the guy
was
just walking
awful.
Like nothing was happening as this clown's piggybacking. I couldn't tell if it was a person or an animatronic at first, which probably made it worse.
Yeah, that would make it worse. Mm-hmm. Kristen, what's your fun fact?
Well, I was going to talk about how buying the correct firmness of pillow can change your life, because I bought two firm ones yesterday at, like, Bed Bath & Beyond, and I slept so much better, and it's, like, night and day from my old pillows. Like, it's amazing. But Mitch's discussion of clowns reminded me, the other day I was driving to work, and coming down the road, like, on the opposite side, so it was coming at me, was this guy who had a stuffed clown, kind of like a scarecrow, but, like, with, like, batting, tied to the top of his car. So, on the roof of his car, and the clown was looking off the top, like, at cars oncoming. And I was like, why would you do that? Like, it was terrifying, and it freaked me out.
People's obsessions with clowns lately,
it's not okay.
No, I'm not even particularly afraid of clowns, but, like, I don't want that in my face.
Yeah, it's just creepy.
Caitlin, my fellow super fan, what do you have for us this week?
Tomorrow is Halloween, so I will be continuing my annual Halloween tradition of watching The Nightmare Before Christmas and
Yay.
Singing aloud obnoxiously with all the songs. And I assume handing out candy to trick-or-treaters.
I might have to watch that, too, tomorrow.
I assume kids trick-or-treat around my new apartment complex, but I don't know. But I have a bunch of candy in case they do.
Oh, yeah, this is your first Halloween at your new place, so you wouldn't know, I guess.
Yeah, and they haven't put out, like, a note that says,
right,
like, reminder, kids will be trick-or-treating or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I bought candy just in case.
Yeah.
That's smart. I like to buy Halloween candy and put it in a big bowl and eat it all myself.
I get some.
Yeah, she gets some, I guess. She has to fight me for it, though. My fun fact this week is that I broke my headphones. I stepped on one of the earbuds, and it's kind of cracked now. I'm still using them. It's weird when I pull it out of my ear, though, because, like, part of it is like, no! It doesn't want to leave my ear, and so I need to figure out if I have any more headphones around here. They're just the cheap, like, iPhone ones, but
I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of shocked that your fun fact didn't include a candle.
Oh my god, I totally... Okay, scratch that. I've got a fun fact for you. How did I forget this? Okay, so guys. I bought a skull candle yesterday, and it's a bleeding skull candle. So when you light it, it, like, the wax pours down the front of the skull, and it has eye sockets, and when it burns through the eye sockets, the blood pours out of the eye sockets. I am so obsessed with this candle.
Wow.
We were watching movies last night, and I just kept, like, watching this candle, and it was more interesting than the movies, and I can't wait to light it again today. Oh my gosh. It's so cool.
It actually is kind of cool. Like, the whole idea kind of grossed me out, but it is neat. And she's so excited. She kept turning on the light. Like, we're watching movies. She'd go and turn on the light so that she could take a new picture to update. Like, it was so great.
I'm very enthusiastic about my candle, and I love it. And I can't believe that I forgot to make that my fun fact. So you got two fun facts for me today.
Karen is supposed to be the nice one. And then she's like, I like the blood dripping skull candle in Mortal Kombat.
It's just one way in which Karen keeps you on your toes. Like, you think she's this nice, pleasant person, and yet she wants the blood to drip from her skull candle.
Yeah, like, it starts with M&M, then it gets into some deeper cuts. You're like, all right, mushrooms got that. Blood dripping candles.
Oh, I love you guys.
We love
anyway,
you, Karen.
This is not the Karen podcast. This is the Buffy podcast. So let's talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, episode 418, Where the Wild Things Are. And in this episode, the couple that slays together stays together. So when Buffy and Riley start doing the dirty all day long, the spirits of repressed and horny children begin haunting the house and causing everyone to go cuckoo. Unfortunately, Buffy and Riley are too busy having sex to notice that the world is literally falling apart, and it's up to a crooning Giles to get the gang down to business to defeat the haunts. Oh, that was very clever. I really appreciate that last line. Before we kick off on a couple of different things, I want to throw this to Caitlin, because as far as I remember, you weren't particularly looking forward to this episode.
Yeah, so this is one of my least favorite of the entire series. And it has something in common with another of my least favorite of the entire series, Beer Bad. They were written by the same writer, Tracy Forbes. She also wrote Something Blue, though, which is one that I think we all liked. So I don't know, but she has in common writing Beer Bad and Or the Wild Things Are, which are two pretty universally reviled episodes in the series.
I actually was not looking forward to this episode either. I think the premise just, you know, kind of makes me roll my eyes. But watching it, I was like, you know what? I actually really enjoyed this episode. And I think it's because a lot of the attention was on everybody else, not necessarily on Buffy and Riley. And we got to see relationships between other characters either, you know, go to the next level or maybe take a step back or relationships kind of forming. And the fact that it wasn't all about Buffy and Riley, that they were just sort of the catalyst, I think helped make me feel a little bit better about this episode. But newbies, Mitch, how did you feel about this one? Did you like it?
So I'm getting to the point in Buffy the Vampire Slayer where I feel like season 4 is never going to end. It's like the longest season of all time, and kind of in a good way. It's very developed, and there's a lot going on. It even feels like there are more episodes in this season, and this episode made me realize this, because we've had Beer Bad in this season, we've had the beginning of Riley in this season, and all that feels like a really long time ago that Buffy was just getting over Angel, because Riley feels like, to me, he's been around for a very long time. So it wasn't really strange to me to see them, like, going at it like this, because this felt like, you know, they're slaying together, they're having sex all the time. That makes sense for where I see their relationship being. Like, they seem very in-depth and very into it. Maybe it's because they've been through so many traumatic events. But I like it. I really like this episode, and I think that it's about due time that we see the one scene that I think Natalie was referencing. She said, yeah, newbies, get ready, because there's going to be a scene where Giles is the one person that everyone was really sexually attracted to later on, and it's odd. And I'm so happy it finally happened. That was a great climax. Oh God, didn't mean to. You get it.
Yes, there's going to be so many awkward phrasings in this
Let the
episode.
puns begin.
I'm like Giles, really,
Amazing.
though. He did that.
Yeah.
Doesn't he do that in the episode? Yeah.
We have a whole talking point about that because we are not going to let that one slide. But Kristen, did you like this episode overall?
I mean, overall, I think it had a lot of good development, especially after the ridiculousness that was Superstar. It had a lot of really good development for like Riley and Buffy prior to them having their sex marathon. And you know, you saw some Anya and Xander stuff that was really good, and even some Tara Willow stuff too. So there's a lot going on. My only like major issue with this is, are they the first two people to have sex in that frat house? Like, seriously, is it just the two of them that brought upon all of this crazy? Like, it wasn't like some witchy voodoo was going on, you know, that they tapped into solely because she was the Slayer. Like, it just surprised me that this only happened because of them.
I think it was the amount of sex and maybe the passion behind it, especially considering like they had just slayed some vampires and stuff. So yeah, the level, I think, is what really kicked it off for them.
And plus, she's
But I mean,
supernatural. That always has a tendency to bring out other supernatural events in the world.
But that is like a main proponent of this episode, the fact that Buffy and Riley can't keep their hands off of each other. And this is the reason why I wasn't really looking forward to the episode, because like, I don't know, I don't mind them together. I think that it's true, the couple that slays together stays together, and that it's definitely an added bonus for them that they can kind of do that. But I'm a little over the Buffy Riley stuff, and I think that I want to focus on the other relationships. Do you guys feel like that, or are you kind of still into like seeing where they go as a couple?
I mean, I'm totally okay with the gratuitous shirtless scenes of Riley. There are a lot, but I'm okay with it. So if he and Buffy stay together and we get more of that, and they have like this, you know, all these hot sex steam scenes, so it keeps the show rolling sometimes. It's almost like that's the gift that just won't stop giving. It's fun.
Yeah, I like them. I mean, they're not particularly deep and, you know, soulful. It's not Angel, but you know, I definitely like them. I just don't think there's a lot to necessarily discuss, especially right now while they're like happy.
Yeah, they're pretty much just like pretty people doing pretty things. There's nothing really
Exactly.
dramatic going on about them. They like had to add in the drama, like they had to insert it supernaturally because they're oh God, because they're doing too good now because they've even worked out. Like they were so quick to work out that faith stuff, it was just like okay, we're done.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, this I love this episode already. We are 12 years old. Yeah, so when we find out that the house is filled with like these intense feelings of these horny children, I mean, there's no other way to really put it, and how that all comes about. The house in particular for me, like because of all the vines and stuff, it felt very much like Jumanji. I don't know if anybody else saw that.
I was thinking like Garden of Eden, twisted
Yeah.
Garden of Eden, and because the religious and horrible old lady who
Right?
abused the children and she was all about sin and
Mrs.
they were.
Landingham is not allowed to be that evil. It freaks me out.
You know, as an
Yeah.
extension of that, I was also kind of thinking this was a mix between Carrie, kind of like. She makes the house all like haunted and crazy, and she's really repressed by her mother, who's much like the caretaker in this episode. But also, I was thinking of the Evil Dead because in both the original and the remake, there's a lot to do with trees creeping around and doing sexual things, like and attacking people. So, like, it's the same kind of vine crawling around, like it is.
And how about that wall where everyone was basically orgasming? every time they touched it.
How did they get that on television?
I don't even know. That's really intense.
I thought the same thing. I was like, this actually aired? Like, what is happening?
And they kept going back to it. Yeah. Like, I thought that first scene was going to be it. And then all of a sudden, like, here we are showing it again. And the girl is, like, moaning. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, and after that, like, anytime somebody touched, like, the wall or the banister or the floor, I was half expecting them to, like, go into hysterics. So, yeah.
Yeah, the House of Horrors for this episode was really interesting in that it was so varied. Like, you got the kid in the bathtub, you got that part of the wall, you got people suddenly feeling different things and acting on maybe repressed feelings or the feelings of the children and the attraction between some people or lack thereof. Like, it was all very, you never knew what was going to happen next, and I really liked that aspect of it.
Julie was so horrifying when she cut all her hair off.
Yeah.
I was just about to talk about that. Yeah, Caitlin, that was very disturbing, wasn't it? Like, once again, very, very Carrie, because she's stuck in the closet, basically being punished. So it's really disturbing. And I wonder, so they're putting on a bald cap on that actress, I assume, but it looked real when she was cutting her hair as it was still long. I don't know if that part was real.
I don't know.
Could have probably been a wig.
Yeah.
But it looked real. Like, the thing was, it was really effective because it just, like, nothing looked like a makeup job to me.
Right, exactly. And it was interesting, too, that it was sort of on both sides of the aisle here because you had people being incredibly sexual, like, overly so, more than I think they normally would be. But then also you had her feeling extremely guilty about what she was doing and feeling and thinking about. And like I said, just the way that the house and everything that was going on there was so different for each person, I found that really interesting, and it could help you kind of read into, like, where maybe they were in their life and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you had Tara, like, backing completely away from Willow, like, yelling at her.
Right, which was so sad to see, like, the shock on Willow's face. And because, I mean, obviously, like, that can't be super easy for Willow. And Willow is pretty shy to begin with, and reaching out. And I mean, it's not like she's completely inexperienced, but she clearly has feelings for Tara. And to be shut down like that, I would be so horrified.
Each and every time that, like, Tara says, like, I can't stay here. Like, I don't feel comfortable. There's something going on. Like, I believe her. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. Right now, she's the most accurate barometer for craziness going on.
Right?
So anytime she, like, starts waving the red flag, like, we need to pay attention, it's like, okay, focus in. Tara's telling you something. Like, everybody pay attention.
Yeah, I'm also happy to see Willow and Tara slowly evolving, because we have to remember that she's still getting over Oz. And she's still hurting, and I think she will be for a very long time. Like, she was very depressed when he left, and she had a lot of episodes, like, I don't know if she was considering ending her life, but she definitely wasn't considering her life of a very high quality. Maybe she had a bit of a moment with Spike where she learned that, you know, she's worth something, because she's worth biting, right? So I'm hoping she's feeling better these days, and she's moving on healthily with Tara. I hope Tara gets a little bit better of a fashion sense. I know we talked a lot about that, but I don't even think she's fashionable for the time at this point, because it's really just like they're throwing on random items of clothing that don't even remotely match in style
all those
or
sweaters.
Color. Yeah, they're like,
I thought she looked cute in this episode. I'm not going to lie. Like, her sweater was a little frumpy, but, like, I don't know. It just worked for her. I love her in pigtails, too.
I feel like they should at least, like, brush her hair. Or, like, make her, like, just like, a little lip liner. Just something, honey. Because, like, the camera lights and all that, they flush you out. And she's a very, you know, light-skinned person with blonde eyebrows. So a lot of her features just, like, really just melt away on the screen, unfortunately. So when I'm looking at her, it's hard to even see her emote or express, because she doesn't really have any stage makeup or camera makeup on whatsoever. And it's almost a little bit distracting. It kind of reminds me of when they make a point of putting Faith in no makeup, but then they have it so that she doesn't have, like, anything, and her lips are very close to her skin tone, so once again, hard to see her emote is where I'm coming at. And this isn't, like, a girls need to wear makeup thing. This is really just, I think they're bringing that she doesn't wear makeup thing past the point where it's not really effective for me in, like, an artistic style.
Okay. I love Tara, and I think that I actually really like the way that they kind of downplay her a little bit. It's just kind of refreshing for me, but I can see where you're coming from. I can understand what you're saying there.
Well, she's a pretty girl, and I mean, that's the thing. They're not doing her a good job of making her look flattering. And I know that she's kind of slouched over, and she doesn't feel very confident. And confidence has a good amount to do with, how you're seen by others. But I think she has a good transformation coming up. Maybe that's what they're doing now, so that they can really like shock and awe us when they finally dress her decently. Like they don't make her look like she just got dressed in the dark and walked out however she looked. Like I'm ready for her to look like she cares. Maybe she's, this also could be a point of it feels like to me Tara hasn't just been an outsider, but she's maybe been depressed some. She probably hasn't had anyone to really care about what she looks like for because she's really been a loner.
She's also a college student.
True.
How many people were wearing pajamas to classes when they were in college? Raise your hands. Like,
Yeah.
yeah. That is an excellent point. Sweatpants are a godsend. True. Especially those early morning classes. Ugh.
But Allison Hannigan, I think they a couple. They look really good together. They match in a way that's like their personalities and like their statures around each other. They have like this really good kinetic chemistry going on where when they're together, I'm always interested to see what's going to happen on screen to the point where I was so sad when Tara draws away from Willow after Willow puts her hand on her leg. I was like, oh, maybe we'll get a kiss now, or maybe this will be a talk, and they're doing this will they, won't they thing that I think is working really well for the show.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And speaking of maybe pulling away, we got Xander and Anya in this episode who are fighting. Anya is worried because they went a day without having sex, and that's only ever happened once before. And she's kind of freaking out and thinking that they're breaking up, and Xander thinks that there should be more to a relationship than just sex. And they're kind of mad at each other, but not necessarily talking it out. And newbies, I want to know how you feel about the relationship because they've actually been together for a little while now, and it was never this process like it was with Riley and Buffy. They kind of sort of just did it and then were together and kept doing it. And it's a pretty solid relationship except for this episode, and they kind of just know what they want out of each other, and it happened all of a sudden. But hasn't necessarily like gone away or anything. And I didn't know if you guys liked that or if you're like, I don't know, it was kind of too sudden.
Well, honestly, it may have been kind of necessary to have an episode like this for them, just because think about how far Xander has come now. He used to really, I mean, like, he's always kind of cared about people, especially Willow, but in the past, he was, willing to be with whomever and was always talking about sex and getting lucky and blah, blah, blah. And now he's the one who's like, it's not a big deal. There should be more to a relationship than sex. Like, it's okay, Anya. Like, she's freaking out. And he's like, there's more to us than that. And I thought it was nice character development for him. It's nice to see him like acknowledge that there's more to life than just screwing all the time.
Yeah. Mitch, what about you?
Listen, I shipped these two from moment one. I even tweeted out, I didn't even know they were going to be a thing. But when she asks him to prom, I was taking screenshots already to like tweet it out because I was like, oh my God, Anya is so me asking someone out. I hate men. Men are evil. Will you go to the prom with me? And ever since then, I've been so 100% Zanya. Zanya is a good ship name. It's like any Z sound just sounds so cool and like exotic.
I don't like the ship names, but that one's pretty good.
It
I
sounds like
have to
the name
admit.
of like a model from America's Next Top Model that Tara would be yelling at. It's not Tara. What's her? Yeah, Tyra. Tyra Banks. Tyra Banks. Tara. Tyra. You could have done better, Zyra. How
We were
dare
rooting
you?
for you.
We were rooting for you. I was rooting for you.
Oh my goodness.
This is off the rails.
Yeah. Caitlin, what are your feelings on Xander and Anya at this point?
I love this development for them. It's another way they're flipping gender norms where you expect the guy to be the one who's all about sex and the woman to be the one wanting the touchy-feely things. And you get Xander, who, like Kristen said, has been very sex obsessed up until this point, wanting more. And that says a lot about just kind of how he feels about her. I think that more than anything shows the degree to which he cares about her and respects her, that he wants more than that. And we've really have not seen that in any relationship he's had. So I think it shows how good she is for him, which is kind of amazing. Like, you wouldn't really expect Anya to have that effect on somebody, especially someone like Xander, who was, teenage boy. But I think she's really good for him.
Yeah, I think they're good for each other because he kind of helps her along. Like, he understands that she doesn't understand everything and he kind of tries to help her. And sometimes Anya just says things and you're like, what? But that's part of her charm, and that's why a huge reason why I like her. So, yeah,
He helps humanize her.
yes, exactly. And this is just, yeah, I like that there was this development in their relationship because, like I said, sometimes it's just, the only look into the relationship is Anya saying, "Can we go have sex now?" and then leaving. Like, literally, that happens more than one time. And to see them fighting like this, like an actual fight, and also talking about their feelings afterward was very nice. But speaking of Anya, Anya also hangs out with Spike for a little bit in this episode, and
Best.
it was pretty awesome. And it was pretty awesome for a whole host of reasons, but I want to hear what you guys have to say about that. Caitlin, you can go first. You sounded excited.
This is the best part of the episode for me. Like, it makes the episode worth existing for this. And just the fact that they're both kind of reminiscing over when they could destroy people with very little thought, and they're just like, ah, back in the day, that was great. It's just, I love it. And then I love, just everything from Spike trying to mug Anya to them like going to the party. Everything between them is brilliant because they do have a lot in common in terms of Anya being a former demon and Spike having the chip in his head. And I don't know, I think it makes sense for them to talk, and they're both so funny.
Yeah, and to bond over their shared experiences. Plus, like, Spike friggin' has chemistry with everybody. He came up to her and got in her face, and I was like, whoa, like, I can feel that. I don't know if anybody else did, but I was like, for a hot second, I was like, Spike and Anya.
Yeah, literally. The man has chemistry with every person. It's freaky. Like, 'cause I caught that too. I'm like, seriously?
Yeah, him and Sarah Michelle Gellar really do. They're really good with like anyone they're on set with. It's amazing.
I also, the other part I like about this scene as well is the fact that they were like, yeah, we should go out and tag team and be like former demons together and see what trouble we can get up to. And they were both like, yeah, maybe later. They weren't like super into it, and it's just, you can slowly see things changing, and that's very exciting too. Okay, and then speaking of people working together, we've got Demons and Vampires working together thanks to Adam. And he wasn't a huge part of this episode, the whole Adam plot point, but they're still keeping it at the forefront so that we can remember week to week like what is going on. So I didn't know if you guys had any interest in this or you were much more concerned about the rest of the episode.
I think I was more interested still in Willow and Tara than I was more than anything else, because they're the most interesting development going on here.
Do you guys think that this is going to be big trouble for the Scoobies, or do you think that Adam's just going to be another bad guy?
Well, they're definitely talking him up. Like, he's been that looming evil that's just kind of hanging out in the background, and nobody's actively, they're actively trying to find him and do things, but there's no, direct action involving him right now. Like after the Jonathan episode where he was the one who kind of just knew that something was totally off and he didn't do anything about it. And then you've got, this episode where you hear that they're still looking for him and working toward it, but there's nothing, crazy dramatic happening. It definitely leads you to think that they're building toward something.
Right. Yeah, good point. So I want to jump into our favorite scenes now because Caitlin got the big one, and I definitely want to spend some time talking about this. So please, Caitlin, take it away.
I was so glad to be the first one in the dock. My favorite scene was Giles at the coffee shop having his adult time, and his adult time turns out to be playing at open mic night and playing the guitar and singing Behind Blue Eyes. And that did things to me, let's just say that. And it did things to all the girls, and I was like, I am with you right now because that is me as well. He was even wearing an earring, let's note.
Like a
Yes,
pirate.
I know.
The amazing sweater, the great voice,
Giles always has
and
the
the
best
earrings.
sweaters too. It's amazing.
Oh, there's nothing about this scene that isn't perfect.
Anthony can sing. Like he really rocked it there. I was really like they just kind of like stayed on it for a little bit longer than I thought they were going to, and I was cool with that. I was like, right, like. Sometimes in shows, like even in Buffy especially, they'll be at the Bronze and they'll be showing off like some random artist that I don't care about because it's not the 90s anymore. And then they just do that with Giles, and I'm like, oh, this is fun. Like, I actually like this long musical interlude that you're throwing in the middle of the episode.
I also
Yeah.
loved that it didn't really look like a performance space. Like, he just kind of stole the chair and turned it around, and everybody was just paying attention. Like, it wasn't like he was on a stage. He was sitting right by a bar. Like, it felt so Giles.
But that means that he planned it out. Like he brought his guitar.
Oh,
He
yeah.
had songs prepared, and he was like, "Listen, I'm going to be so good at playing this guitar that people are going to sit around my turned around chair and listen to me."
Oh, yeah.
What does he do
I'm
for money? Like, do you
really.
think he like just gets paid for like maybe the coffee shop is like paying him to be like the troubadour of Gilmore Girls, like kind of low key, seem like you're just there, but you're really being paid to do it.
Maybe he got a severance package from the Watchers Council. There
Yeah,
you
or maybe
go.
just from the school blowing up, like they had to pay out the teachers and a lot of different, lawsuits or something like that. That could help.
He also probably does freelance demon research for other rogue demon
Rogue
hunters.
demon hunters.
Oh my gosh, that's great. I really wish Kate, I really wish Brittany had been on this episode because I messaged her earlier and she just gave me like a heart eyes reaction gif, and I was like, that is so appropriate. But I'm sure she will talk about it at length next time she's on, and we will let her because she really loved that scene too.
I'm just so
But
glad the
yeah,
show
it
finally
was
catches
great.
up to us and is like, yes, Giles is sexy, we know.
My favorite scene was just every time Forrest was so done with Riley being horny for Buffy, and just like, how does this guy even function? And he's so annoyed because they are not being subtle, and he's just like, man, you have no game. And his faces were wonderful.
Forrest is no longer the sassy gay friend that I want. He's more of the sassy gay friend that gets into your business too much.
Aw, well, we'll see what happens.
Hopefully he's
The
not
Chris.
evil, like, choose me or choose Buffy. Riley, make your choice. Like, I don't want that for the finale.
Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was basically anytime Spike was like, anytime we got to see Spike at the party, like from when he entered and Xander tried to get him, like, tried to get the initiative's attention by like, yell, what was it, number 17, or I forget
Hostile number
his ID
17,
number.
yeah.
Hostel number
Hostile
17.
17.
Yeah, like when he just starts yelling, and then later on when he's cool, chilling in the chair, and the guy's like, "You look familiar," and he's like, "I know, I get that all the time." Like, just Spike being chill at the party was great.
Why does he always get wrapped up and like chained up and stuff? Like, I don't know what the deal with that was even at this scene.
Because they know their audience.
Oh God.
Well, and he's a
Bitch, you
demon.
walked into that one.
I did. I did.
Well, he's technically a demon, and she was, it was a house of like, religious
Right,
stuff.
right.
So the house knew and was like, uh-uh.
You think he would just burn up? That'd be sad. No, you can't
Right?
do that.
Just poof, gone.
That'd be awful. It
Not
would be
like I would if
sad.
I
We would
walked
be
into a
spiteless, and
church.
I would be sad.
Yeah. Mitch, what was your favorite scene?
Mine is the stinger of everyone expecting Riley and Buffy to be miserable, but they're really happy because they just had a lot of sex. They're like, sure, we almost died doing it, but what a way to go.
That's true.
I do have one last question. What was with the random really long camera zoom out of them, and then like when it came back from commercial and it was still zoomed out and like came back in? That whole thing just weirded me out. When
Where
they
the
were
bed
sleeping
was like all
together?
black.
Yeah. It just seemed like cr kind of in like I don't know if they were just trying to get across that like it was like marathon sex going on or what. But it
I
like
think they were trying to show how isolated they were, that they like
Yeah.
could not like hear or care that much about everything else. They were completely isolated by the house.
It
It
kind of
was just
reminded
okay. It
me.
was just kind of jarring. So I think that was more or less, I was just like, what is happening?
It kind of reminded me of the same imagery you get in Stranger Things when they're in the Upside Down. Not always in the Upside Down, in the in-between, I'm going to call it, when Eleven is kind of like standing in like the water and she's like seeing people or visions or, and things. And it's
Right.
like outside, yeah, you're like in a different kind of purgatory universe, I guess.
I can dig it. Yeah, that totally works.
Definitely they
Yeah.
weren't. So, I mean, here's the thing though, with this house, I didn't really put it together that this was just like a townhouse for all of them. I thought this was just like a general dorm room. It's really, the sets are kind of confusing for me in this season because they're too nice for being anything college, first off, and I
Well,
didn't.
it's a fraternity house, and the members of the frat live in the fraternity house.
Yeah, and it took me like way too long to understand that. And I don't know if it was like when Anya was like, "Yeah, we have," like for the 50th time someone mentions, "Yeah, we have an underground research facility underneath this." I just think like even the opening shot of the episode, it just felt weird when Riley's like, getting up and going to the bathtub. The whole set of it all just felt like not a fraternity house even. It felt like I was somewhere else. Like I was like, "Oh, are we at Giles' house? Did he like, have some remodeling going on or something?" Like it just For some reason, it still felt obscure to me, but now I finally get it.
Suspend your disbelief, Mitch. If you can believe that there are vampires, then you'll just have to believe they have nice frat houses. But speaking of the marathon sex, that kind of leads us into your favorite line, Mitch.
Yeah, mine's when Buffy and Riley are not being very subtle about what they want. Riley goes, "Buffy, hey, look at the time. Don't you have a class?" Buffy goes, "Yeah, in about 20 minutes, Riley." "Yeah, but I have that thing." Buffy, "Right, that thing. We could squeeze in before, Riley." "Yeah," and then they run off.
Really not subtle.
Nope. And even Giles, I love it when they're like, "Oh, Giles, you don't get it? They're about to." He's like, "Yes, I was a 20-something once. I understand."
Giles was a wild party guy. He's the Ripper. He knows.
Oh,
He
I know. We need a
knows.
Ripper spinoff just to see these days. Like, they tantalize us so much with this character.
They do. They really do. The rest of our lines are kind of all in line with each other, and they center around Spike and Anya mostly. I'll start off with mine because it came first chronologically, and it's just when Spike jumps out at Anya, and she's scared at first, and then she's like, "Oh, it's just you." And he still tries to mug her, and she goes, "You're not even bumpy anymore." And he's like, "Oh, wait, let me fix that." And he tries to, and it's just this whole like the way that they compare it to like an erectile dysfunction thing, like they did in that episode with Willow, and here it just, I don't know why it kills me. Like I said, I'm a 12-year-old boy, but oh my God, it was so funny. Caitlin, your line comes next.
Yeah, so mine is when they're in the bronze, like kind of commiserating. And Anya says, "A year and a half ago, I could have eviscerated him with my thoughts. Now I can barely hurt his feelings. Things used to be so much simpler." And Spike says, "You know, you take the killing for granted, and then it's gone, and you're like, I wish I'd appreciated it more. Stop and smell the corpses, you know?" Everything about that, like, you take the killing for granted.
Stop and smell the corpses.
Corpses. Oh, everything's so good.
And then Kristen?
Mine is from when they were standing on the porch of the frat house and Xander's like, I am going back in to save my friend. And Anya's like, we should go. And he goes, is anyone coming with me? And Spike goes, I am. I know I'm not the first choice for heroics. And Buffy's tried to kill me more than once. And I don't fancy a single one of you at all. But actually, all that sounds pretty convincing. I wonder if Asian House is open. And just walks away.
The way that he exits the scene is just so perfect.
Like, it starts out all, like, epic. And he's like, I'm going in. And you're like, oh, Spike. And then he's like, no, I'm not. What was I thinking? No. Time to leave. It's genius. It's very Spike.
Yeah, it is genius, though, because obviously they're incorporating Spike more into the story, but we're not forgetting who he was. This isn't like an instant transition. All of a sudden, he's hanging out with the Scoobies all the time. He just kind of ends up with them sometimes, but he's still who he is. Like when he screams, you guys forget, I hate you all. And I think the way that they're subtly doing that is just, it is genius. I love it so much. Okay, let's jump into Angel episode 118, 5x5 now. In this episode, Faith gets off on a greyhound, only to find herself hired to hunt down Angel. Wesley thinks she is still worth saving, at least until she starts sadistically torturing him in a chair. In the end, it seems like everyone's lost a little faith, until Angel puts on a suit and saves her with a hug. This is an excellent episode. A lot of people really like this one. It is kind of heavy, but there's a lot of character development and a lot of backstory for Angel as well, which we've gotten plenty of times before, but in this episode in particular, the flashbacks surround when he first got his soul. And I wanted to hear what you guys thought about, like, finally seeing that. Of course, we don't see, like, every little bit of the moment, but we see him when he first realizes what he's done as a vampire without a soul.
I loved it, and I'm starting to feel like we don't really need an Angela spinoff because we could just compile all of the scenes in chronological order that happened throughout the entirety of the show Angel, and we'll have an Angela spinoff built in within. You'll be fine. I'm sure that exists somewhere. I'm sure someone's done that by now.
Yeah, my first reaction was, oh, Darla. And then,
don't you mean like in Finding Nemo? Darla!
Yeah. Once I realized, like, what we were seeing, like, when he says, like, she's a gypsy, and I'm like, oh, like, this is that moment. Okay. Yeah, like, at first, I was just kind of over Darla, but it's kind of, like, the pivotal moment for Angel. It's, like, when Angel was born, and when Angela's kind of drifted away, and so it's a really important moment. I'm glad we finally got a chance to see it.
And it really dovetails nicely with Faith's story as well. So it makes a lot of sense that this is when we would be seeing, you know, what happened. Because Angel really was the only one who had a decent shot at reaching her in season 3 of Buffy right before Wesley stormed in, as Angel reminds him at one point in the episode. But he genuinely could relate to her. So it's really perfect that we can see what is leading, you know, we know intellectually from what we were told why he can relate to her, but now we're actually seeing it, and that's even more powerful.
Yeah, and exactly. The juxtaposition of these two scenes where Angel is now Angel and he saves, or he doesn't kill that one woman who took pity on him as a beggar, and then Faith also saying, I'm evil, they're both feeling a lot of the same guilt of the things that they've done in the past, and they're trying to still be evil, but they're too wrought with guilt that they can't continue on doing what they wanted to do.
Right, exactly. And this all kind of comes to a head in that scene where Cordelia is talking about people being exactly what and who they seem to be, and she says, scratch the surface, and what do you get? More surface.
And I think in particular for Angel, that's really not true because he has changed so much over the years. And especially now, like, he realizes what he's done in his past and he's continually trying to make amends for that. But I wanted to know what you guys thought about her line, if you think it's true, if you think it's true for some characters and maybe not for others.
It's tough for me to understand and where Cordelia's coming from as of late, because I'm finding her to be almost too much comedic relief. She was fine as comedic relief on Buffy, because that's absolutely what she was for most of the time. She came in, she did some important stuff every once in a while, but she was never a main character to even have a different role. But now that she's an Angel, I know that they're trying to evolve her, make her more serious, and she has moments like that when she gets into this even speaks for herself. She gets past her surface when, Wesley is abducted and she wakes up and she's being very serious to Angel. I love those moments with Cordelia. But even this, like the scratch of the surface line, it started to feel just like comedic relief again. It didn't feel like it really could go too much deeper for this character. And I was sad by that. It feels like to me like the writing room is just like, we need to continue a good stream of like kind of quippy things going on, and we're going to just choose Cordelia for that always, 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 when maybe they can try and spread it out a bit more with Angel and Wesley. And that's where, like I'm saying, the scratch the surface and what do you get more surface line, it may just be an insecurity thing. It could just be that Cordelia is afraid that she comes off that way because she knows that she's this comedic relief, because she knows that she has more to offer.
Caitlin, do you have anything to say about that? I feel like you might have some feelings.
I mean, it's interesting because Cordelia, we saw when Buffy could read minds that, you know, she says exactly what she thinks. Like, there's no disconnect between what she says and what she thinks. But like Mitch said, you know, since she's come to Angel, there's been clearly more depth to her character. So I don't know. I think it's also telling based on her experience in Hollywood, because that's what she would be experiencing with all these other actresses and casting directors and everything, that it's all surface. There's very little depth under there. But when it's, you know, the main characters, they absolutely have a lot more depth. And I think maybe that's also a little scary for someone like Faith, who might not be as evil as they think she is.
Right, exactly. And I mean, there are characters across both shows that you can see how they've changed and their depth and their complexities. I think that's something that Buffy does very well, is make the characters very complex. And so this line to me felt a little short-sighted, but I think perhaps that was also the point. You know, Cordelia can't be right all the time, the characters can't be right all the time, and they're going to make wrong judgments, and that's just kind of how it is. But I definitely want to revisit this a bit more at the end, and there are a couple of points that I really want to bring up at the end, because I think things tie in together so well. But before we get there, obviously we see Wolfram and Hart hire Faith, and she goes after Angel. And in the doc here, it says Faith doesn't seem to be trying very hard to kill Angel. And I think that's interesting. I think it's also interesting her interactions with him, given that, like, she's saying, let's play the game. And that is also a very Angelus kind of thing, which was interesting to see compared to the flashbacks and all of that. But what I really want to talk about here is when everybody sees Faith for the first time and how shocked they are, because nobody from Sunnydale told them what had happened. And I feel like that would have been a nice phone call to have.
Seriously, like, nobody told them? Come on.
And I almost consider that like a plot fallacy, but then I think I can see it better being that these are just the characters, you know, living separate lives at this point. And this is also in respect of trying to keep Buffy and Angel's lives completely separate. That's like everyone's on that T team. Like, Giles barely told Angel anything about what Faith was doing. He just said it was bad because he's trying to protect Angel still in his emotional state from all that. So I get it. I do. But I do think Giles probably... I mean, Wesley makes a great point. I was her watcher. Why didn't he at least tell me? Like, it doesn't matter. Because does Giles even know that Wesley's... I mean, I'm sure Angel and Giles have, like, email correspondence. Is that a thing yet? Do people email yet? But I don't know if Giles knows that Wesley is part of Angel Investigations now.
That would be the question. But I would assume that even if Wesley wasn't at Angel Investigations, I would assume Giles and Wesley have some way to communicate just in case of Faith. Like, because he is her watcher, she was in a coma last he knew. He took off. Like, I would have hoped that there was some way for them to get into contact in case Faith came around and Wesley was needed. But, you know, it's one of those just out of sight, out of mind. They didn't think about it. And then, oops, yeah, I probably should have made that call.
And I was going to say they can talk via enchanted mirror, but then I realized that Angel can't be seen in a mirror. So Giles would be talking to an invisible person.
Oh, my goodness. I really liked this part, too, because when they first see Faith and they first realize that she is there, that lineup shot of the three of them looking so shocked, it just, they all know what's going on right now, and it's not quite the whole, like, Wesley doesn't really understand who Angelus is and how bad Angelus can be, which is what we were talking about last week. But, like, everybody knows what it means that Faith is back. And the fact that they're so scared, I think, brings a real kind of weight to the episode. And I liked that they were all kind of on the same page. But then again, were they all on the same page? Because we get a bit of Angel telling Wesley, like, they're not a team, he's their boss, and they need to do what he tells them to do. And I think Angel was obviously telling this to them from a place of love, because he wanted them to scatter and not get into trouble. But time and time again, we see how important it is to be a team and to work together, and how that can be so much better than being alone. But I just wanted to know what you guys thought of that attitude that Angel had, if you were frustrated by it or if you understood where he was coming from.
Well, we have to understand even a little bit deeper, too, that Giles probably holds a lot of resentment toward Angel / Angelus. And I don't know if he's able to separate those two from Jenny. I don't think he's ever going to forgive that. And maybe he has the right to still have that. He might blame Angel for, like, why would you still live if you know Angelus can still come out? Or why would you... did he know about the true moment of happiness bit? I don't know if he did. So I don't know if we can hold him culpable for that. But still, it's always going to be a thing that Giles is going to have a certain coldness toward Angel because of that, if anything.
Anything about... hold on a sec. Okay, yeah, I want to talk about that later. And of course, we also see Angel dressing up as a lawyer and that whole scene and going in to see Lindsay and playing it cool and dressing up in a suit. I thought he looked amazing here, and just the way that he can bluff is pretty great sometimes.
So good.
And he looks fine in a suit. Like, you never would have expected that, but... I'm actually kind of sad, though, he didn't wear, like, prosthetic makeup or, like, you know, wear a hat or something. Just something to change it up, like different hair, wig, or... Because he looks so Angel with that spiked up hair.
I mean, the best part is obviously when the lawyer mistakes him for being a lawyer in the firm.
I know.
And he tries to go along with it.
I love the comedy of any TV show that plays off a good moment like that. Like, oh, you don't remember Judy from marketing? Yeah, she's best friends with Mike from accounting. And they're like, yes, Mike! And
I mean, it's so not smooth, but it is smooth at the same time because it works. And you're like, how did that just happen? And while he's off doing that, we see Cordelia and Wesley go to her apartment, and once again, Dennis the ghost tries to help, and they don't necessarily listen to him, but it was pretty awesome on his part that he was trying to send her a message. Too bad she didn't understand what he was trying to say.
I tweeted that Cordelia really needs to take Phantom Dennis's hints more seriously while I was watching this.
Could save a lot of pain.
I was kind of hoping that Phantom Dennis was going to come to the rescue here. It was going to, like, knock out Faith or, like, trip her or something. Because if he has the power to close a door, you think he can at least pull the rug from underneath her.
True. It's like, Phantom Dennis, less jealous, more warning you that there's a creepy thing in your apartment.
Lights, like, in Stranger Things so that he could send her messages.
Danger!
Oh, that's great. Morse code, yeah. Or make an alphabet. Paint an alphabet on your wall, Cordelia.
Mm-hmm. That would be great. But, you know, Faith does knock Cordelia out, takes Wesley, and starts torturing him. And this scene, I think, is so heavy, too, because Faith obviously represents Wesley's greatest failure, or in his eyes, his greatest failure. As her watcher, he let her down. And we see a different side to Wesley. We've seen him kind of toughen up before, but particularly in this episode when talking about Angel and his attitude toward the team and kind of understanding where he was coming from versus Cordelia, who didn't necessarily get it. And also some of the things that Wesley says to Faith in this scene, he's got some layers. And I wanted to know what you guys thought about Wesley and maybe what we do and don't know about him.
Wesley. Yeah, I mean, considering where Wesley and Faith were, like, the last time we saw them, like, she basically saw him as useless, and she had moved on to being with the mayor and all of that stuff, and, you know, like, the last time they were together, it was very different, and now seeing her, like, kidnap him and torture him and, like, try and get in his head and him not letting her, like, they've both come a long way. Like, they've both taken a really crazy journey to get to the point they're at now. Faith's has been a very dark journey. Wesley's has, you know, he's definitely found himself, and he's found his place at Angel Investigations, and you can tell he's a lot more sure of his worth in the world, and he's you know, he's a lot more ready to do his part. So I liked seeing how they've both grown separately and what that means for them, like, up against each other solely.
There's this moment in this scene that sticks out to me, where I think it's where Faith is, like, trying him to get him to be like, what kind of torture would you like? But he's like, you know what? And she kneels in front of him and is like, what's that? And she genuinely looks like if he said the right thing, he could change her mind. Because she, for the whole time, has not looked into the whole thing. Like, she's very pale. They're very clear. Like, when she's looking out the window, she doesn't look very into it when she drops the piece of glass. Like, she does not seem invested in this. Like, it's really clearly bothering her, and she's just trying to put on this evil front the whole time. And so when she's kneeling in front of him, and it's right before he tells her that she's a piece of shit, but she has this expression on her face, like, that genuinely looked so open, that if he had said the right thing, like something about, I don't know, maybe seeing that she had a chance to redeem herself, that she probably would have completely gone a different direction, because it's so telling that she is still that open to his opinion, because she gets more aggressive after he calls her a name. But it's just that moment of openness. She looks so vulnerable there, and his opinion still holds so much power for her. That's really amazing to me.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think in that moment that Wesley, who is somebody I think who has his head on his shoulders and can read each other, you know, fairly well. Like, he understands the difficulties that Angel, for instance, has gone through. Why do you think in that moment he felt the need to say that versus something that could take her in a different direction?
I think that he was being petty, almost. I mean, petty in the sense, like, he'd just been tortured. That's not entirely petty. But it's not, is like, I don't think he had it in him in that moment.
And it's tough as, like, a viewer to, like, because I know we can be emotionally invested, but we're not physically invested in the torture. So it's not like we're in his position to understand why he would feel the need to be petty at that point. And it's almost like a survival tactic, like, He had two choices there. He could make it really genuine, or he could make it sarcastic so that, you know, he's not showing her fear. And I think that's another good thing that he did here. I probably would have acted in the same right, and I'm happy Wesley did. Wesley has definitely grown a big pair of cojones here. He's really just, he's killing it in Angel. It's very fun. But the tough thing about this entire bit with Faith is that Buffyverse in general has an interesting story to tell with who can be redeemed and who can't, and why do we kill people, or they killed in cold blood. We're always talking about that. Spike's a prime example, but so is Faith now, because we have this history of Angel trying to save her back when she was, I think she just murdered the mayor's henchman at one point, maybe it was right after that, and now they're back to doing the same thing, essentially, because even, like, Wesley drops the knife. Like, he could have easily killed her from the fact that she just tortured him. And that's not even in cold blood anymore. That's like, the hottest of all hot blood, if you ask me, for him. For Angel, I get it. They're hugging. Like, that's cool. But imagine how tragic it would have been if Wesley was just like, screw this, you can't hug her. She was, like, chopping off bits of me. She's gone. And I would have probably understood that. It would have been tragic, but I would have gotten it. So now I'm like, where can we even go? Because Wesley, he really could have killed her. Can he even trust her? Can he see her again? Like, I don't even know what they can do after this torture scene. That was such a dark bit.
I think that is one of the most interesting things about Faith, too, is because she is, whether you want to call her an outright villain or an antagonist or just somebody who has kind of gotten her wires mixed a little bit, she is such a complex character, and the way that she comes at these situations, obviously she's working against our heroes, but as is said in the doc here, like, she makes it so personal. And Kristen and I were actually talking about this right before the episode, because Kristen, you said, like, you're not necessarily emotionally invested in Faith, but you also see where she's coming from. And I think that is the difference between Faith and a lot of the other villains on the shows, is, like, you know that they're the bad guy, you know that they want to take over the world, and it's just about defeating them, versus when it's Faith, it's about saving her. And that is actually a huge difference.
Yeah, I've never really had a chance to grow emotionally attached to Faith. Like, I like her as a character. She brings a lot of interesting storyline and a lot of interesting discussion to the show. Like, she has a lot to give us as a character, and so I like seeing her, and I like what her being around does for other characters, but I've just never had a chance to really, like, be emotionally attached and care about every time something happens. Which is why Karen asked me that, because I didn't cry at the end of the episode. But, like, she's so damaged, and it's not her fault, and yet she keeps making these mistakes that get her in these positions. And, you know, it takes someone like Angel to kind of have a little bit of mercy and give her a moment. And so I do like Faith. I just have never really grown attached.
I think it's interesting that we note that she makes things personal, because I feel like for Faith, it's all boiled down to her wanting the life that Buffy had. And so everything for her has been all about these personal connections that she's been looking for. So she makes her attacks very personal, because that's where she feels the most attacked, because she wanted that life. She wanted the friends and probably a stable relationship and everything. And she gets completely pushed out of that. So I think she's attacking where she feels the most vulnerable and hurt.
Right. I think that makes a lot of sense. And that is a good segue into our favorite scenes, because Caitlin, you picked the scene that I honestly want to talk about the most, which is the very end of the episode. So how did you react to that scene? And did you cry? Because I need to know.
I was pretty emotionally wrecked by this. Like, I think Faith is so fascinating to me in this episode. I've never been more emotionally invested in her than in this episode, because I would say Elijah Dushku does so well in this episode to show kind of Faith's distance the whole time. Like, she's not particularly invested. And I think she jumps on the chance to kill Angel because she recognizes that he was the only one to ever understand her. And he's also probably the one who has the best chance of killing her. So if she can, you know, push him enough, she'll, you know, get this outcome what we eventually find out that she wants, which is for him to kill her. And so she realizes if she goes down that avenue, he has the best shot of doing it. And that's so fascinating to me, that she was not actually that into, at least the impression I had through the whole episode, is she's not invested in hurting anyone. She is just trying to get to this end of fighting Angel, with the stakes being life and death, because she doesn't want it anymore. She is, after this whole ordeal with Buffy and realizing that she's lost the mare and realizing that, you know, she doesn't seem like she has any chance at that life that she wanted that Buffy has, like, there's just no point in going on at all for her. And who can take her down? Because she's the Slayer. And it'd be so much easier if someone just killed her. And that's just, it's so powerful. And I thought Elijah Dushku had such a powerful performance through the whole arc of the episode. And then it gets to the point where Angel recognizes exactly what she's doing. He sees through it the whole time and sees what she wants and says, you know, I'm not going to make it easy for you. And he is just there. And it's very perceptive of him, probably because he's been there. And it's just so compassionate. And it just is really emotionally devastating, but so well done.
Oh, yeah. Her range throughout this episode between being angry, sassy, sarcastic, vulnerable, desperate. I mean, she goes through a gamut of emotions, and it's incredible that you can read every single one of those in her eyes and on her face, and especially the end. I definitely cried at the end. And it was funny because I watched this episode earlier today, cried, and then I could hear it playing as Kristen watched the episode, and I started tearing up again, and I wasn't even watching it. It was like from, you know, the other side of the apartment, and I was like, God, this just, it messes me up so much, because when she screams at him, just kill me, for Faith to say that, is opening herself up to somebody that she can relate to, but she's never particularly liked Angel. And Angel is obviously a vampire, and that was a whole thing that they kind of had to get through when everybody was on the same team. And it's hard for her to be that vulnerable, but that is just how desperate and upset she is at her lot in life right now. And the way that she screams that, just kill me, over and over again, and the way that she fights and then sort of just falls into his arms is just, it's so tragic. Like, there's no other way to put it, but it's so emotionally charged. And Mitch, I wanted to know if, like, you really felt that at the end, or if you, you know, had other feelings about this twist, because it is a pretty big twist. You really do think that Faith just wants to kill Angel, and then in the end you realize, like, She's not really that invested in that motive.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking of you, Karen, as this fight's happening, because they sound like they're playing Mortal Kombat from the way that she's like, come on, try harder. Get back up. Fight me. Finish me if that's what you want. And then I was like, oh, she's doing it because she wants to die. I get it now. Because she's playing a really, really tough role here, where she has to like, basically lie to the audience and to Angel for a bit, make it look like he really, surely wants to fight him, but only get him riled up enough so that she can then get to this emotional state where she's ready to die. And that's tough, because how do you go from, I want to survive to the umpteenth degree, almost, like, when she's first starting to fight Angel, to, I want to die right now. That's like, the two extremes that you can go on the spectrum of that little bit of acting, and I think she did it amazingly, and that's why it sells so well. That's why I cried, too, when I watched this. It's very far and few between now that I cry at Angel or Buffy. I think the last time I must have was probably when Angel died, but, you know, that didn't really last or stick, so I've learned a lesson there. But here, it's more of like, I think I can cry more, not deaths, but more of emotional moments that happen like this, where a character finally opens up and we see where they can grow and move from there. It's going to be a really, really weird, weird road. And this is a two-parter, right? Like, this is, what else can really happen here? Is this going to be like, see, as a newbie, I'm totally blank here, of course. Like, does Faith stay in the show? Like, I thought maybe Faith or Wesley was going to die in this episode. I didn't know. And now that they're both alive, and she's, like, kind of trying to be good, I guess, now, because she's giving in to Angel's arms, it's like, okay, where are we going with this? Like, is he going to start dating another Slayer? Or is she only going to stay in for now, and they're going to, like, throw her in rehab? Or like some kind of mental institution. I don't know. Like, I don't know where we go from here, and I don't know why this is a two-parter, because it really feels like it wrapped up pretty nicely here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, no comment. We're going to have to see what happens, and you're just going to have to deal with not knowing anything at the moment.
Very good. No comment.
But I wanted to know your favorite scene as well, Mitch, because that kind of takes place here as well.
Yeah, mine's the rainy bit of the fight scene, because it reminds me, Karen, of Daredevil when he's first fighting the guy in season one, and Karen sees him outside, and she's like, oh, who's this guy spitting up blood in the rain? It's kind of sexy. And it reminded me of that, because I love people fighting, like, the Spider-Man kiss, you know? Like, he's upside down, and she kisses him. I love rainy alleyway fights, or, like, action is just, it's always just so sultry in a certain way. And not that this is exactly sultry, but it has, the whole show Angel has this sexy feel because it's dark and brooding, and it's Los Angeles, the city of angels, and our character's angel. So I loved how that played out.
Yeah, I was reading up on the production of this episode a little bit, which I've tried to get in the habit of doing, because there are definitely things that I don't know that occurred way back when, or maybe like people have really gotten into the series know that I might not be aware of, so I like to read up on those sort of things. And apparently in this episode, I think it was the director, maybe, or perhaps the writer, I'm not sure, they wanted it to rain in this scene, and I guess they were used to working on movies with much bigger budgets, and that wasn't really a thing that they could do and afford on the show, except there was like a thunderstorm for 3 days and torrential downpours, and they ended up getting the rain anyway, which is pretty awesome timing. And I think it really elevates the drama, and especially elevates Faith's confession at the end and her crying and everything. And it just like adds that much more emotional weight to an already heavy scene.
Oh, do they film Buffy and Angel both in Hollywood, or do they go up to Toronto or somewhere else?
I think it's in Cali, isn't it?
If it is, then they should have stopped what they were doing, like, in, well, not just in real life, but in this fight scene, and been like, wait, stop, it's raining, it's Los Angeles, this doesn't happen. Almost like when it snowed in Sunnydale and they were so amazed. It's like the same effect.
Yeah. Almost. Crystal, what was your favorite scene?
Well, I mean, the best scene is definitely the fight scene in all of its glory because of everything that happens in it. But I also really liked the interplay between Wesley and Faith, and seeing what's gone on between them and all of that. That scene really got me. Like, as I said before, like, they've both come a long way on their own, and to see them kind of go up against each other here, like him tied to a chair, that scene just had a lot in it for me, and it affected me just as much as the final one did. So it was really, really well done.
Cool.
My favorite scene was Faith's trick with the gun and the bullets, because it gets me every time. Like, Angel shoots at her, no hesitation, by the way, which was, like, intimidating, kind of hot, not gonna lie. Like, just the way he was like, yeah, click, and it was a blank, and then she takes the gun back and shoots him because the first one was a blank, but it doesn't mean the second one was. I just thought that was pretty clever on Faith's part. Like, she really thought this through.
What if he had tried to shoot, like, both of her kneecaps out? Like, she would have gotten shot on the second one.
She was willing to take that risk.
Didn't seem really smart to me.
Jumping into favorite lines now, let's see, where should we start? Caitlin, let's start with you.
Okay, so mine was, I referenced it earlier, is the scene where Angel basically calls Wesley out for his actions in Buffy season 3, and Wesley says, if there's even a chance she could be reasoned with, and Angel breaks in and says, there was. Last year, I had a shot at saving her. I was pulling her back from the brink when Sky kidnapped her and made damn sure she'd never trust a living soul. And Cordelia then says, Angel, it's not Wesley's fault that some British guy ruined your... Oh, wait, that was you. Go on. And then I realized later with... that's kind of perfect because Angel isn't a living soul, but she trusts him because he has a soul, but it's not living. Ba-dum-ching.
Yeah, that's, I didn't realize that until I saw you wrote it down. I was like, oh, that's so good. Mitch, what's your favorite line?
Mine is the murder of that one Weasley Wolfram and Hart lawyer from the pilot episode. I think he died because Faith gets angry when he's like, yeah, well, I'm in power. But she's like, she starts banging his head on the desk. And very coyly, Lindsay just goes, Jesse, I think you better make it 3 for dinner instead of 4. And I love that they're so cold and dead to the world that they can just watch their cohort being murdered. And they're like, eh. It sets up a good villain. It shows, like, that they don't really have anything to lose, essentially. Like, you can kill off any of them, and they're like a hydra, really. They'll just come back with 10 more, probably.
He didn't die, did he?
I don't know. They didn't show him dying, but he's definitely not making it to dinner. I'll give you that much.
I think I assumed he died. Like, I did. Maybe he's just injured and not going to make it to dinner, but I think I assumed he was dead.
Like, she kept going. Like, it was the first hit, and I was like, okay, maybe they're done. Because she was just like, you don't look so good now. And I'm like, okay, it's for looks. But then she kept hitting him, and I'm like, oh, she's, like, going for murder now. That's just going to happen.
I assumed, Caitlin, I want you to weigh in on this, too. I actually just assumed that that meant, like, Faith wasn't going to dinner because Faith's not the dinner kind of girl, and I think they were wanting to, like, wine and dine her and then realize maybe that's not the right place to take it. But I don't, Caitlin, how did you read that?
I read it that Faith murdered the lawyer, and so he was not going to make it to dinner because he got his face bashed in.
Okay, clearly I am the naive and innocent one of this group because I was like, he's
with your
fine.
Blood dripping candle.
Yeah, you're the naive little innocent one, Karen.
I am a series of contradictions. That's why you guys like me so much.
And we didn't talk about, like, the bit with that one lawyer, Lindsay. Yeah, he's a little bit, he's coming up as, like, the new villain next to, I can't remember her name, the lady that's kind of like.
Lila?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Lila's the female lawyer.
Yeah, Lila and Lindsay seem to be, like, the new big bads of Wolfram and Hart. Like, they're the faces we can put for this. And I'm happy, because I remember during the Angel pilot, I was like, I really don't care, because there's only one guy, and he didn't seem too memorable for the Wolfram and Hart baddies. But these two, Lindsay and Lila, they seem a lot more, like, mustache twirly in a good way. I like them. I think they're going to be cool. And Lila seems like she has more going on. She's had the ring with Angel, and now she's doing a little bit of fear with Faith when she was scared of being robbed. So I can see Wolfram and Hart evolving into something I can appreciate now.
And she looks good in diamonds.
She does look good in diamonds.
That's true. And the fact, like you were saying, Mitch, the fact that you can put a face to the name now and that there are a couple of people that you're like, oh, I remember you, like, that makes it a little bit easier to kind of start to see what's going on here. So, yeah, that's a good point. I'm going to do my line next because we should probably end it on a funny one with Kristen's. But mine was when Angel's confessing to Darla and says, after he's gotten his soul, and says, "Funny, you would think with all the people I've maimed and killed, I wouldn't be able to remember every single one." And that just, like, punched me in the heart. That was so upsetting.
That is such a good line. And it's so apropos.
Yeah.
I mean, Christine, it very much shapes who he's become.
Yeah, absolutely. Kristen, what was your favorite line?
Mine is from the beginning of the episode, when Angel kind of comes in after having a victory over Wolfram and Hart, and he's still a little scowly, and Cordy says, "You can always tell when he's happy. His scowl is slightly less scowly."
It is true, though. So true. Cool. Well, that wraps up our discussion for both Buffy and Angel. And like I said before, if you would like to get into contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. This post on hypable.com or rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Please remember to keep them spoiler free for our newbies so we don't accidentally come up against something we shouldn't. And we really, really love it when you guys leave us iTunes reviews, especially 5 stars if you can spare them. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will hold you until it doesn't hurt anymore. And what's better than that?
That sounds very comforting. I think I need to do this. I need to rate us a 5-star review now.
Next time
I don't know. Karen is a series of contradictions, so that worries me a little.
It's okay as long as you lock your door when you're sleeping. It's fine.
Oh no.
Oh god.
I really hope you don't do that. Kidding. That's so disturbing.
I'm kidding. Our doors don't even lock. Relax. I was joking.
That's true. Okay. I feel bad. It's okay. Okay. Listener feedback. This first one off of Twitter. Caitlin, would you like to grab this one?
Sure. Alejandro Claro says, "Damn, Angel looked good in a suit. And damn, you're right, because he sure did."
Yeah, definitely. And we've got Laura from Twitter, too, and I feel like I should take this one, who says, who at replied Ariana and said, "Listening to the episode now, I have 2 friends named Karen that spell their names Karen, C-A-R-R-O-N, and C-A-R-E-N. And I wish I had been on this episode because I also know some people who spell their names, spell Karen very differently. And mine's the standard Karen, Karen with a K." And I knew a teacher, though, in middle school who spelled her name K-A-R-Y-N, and I always thought that was really pretty because I always wanted, like, a Y in my name.
That's really different.
It is, yeah, but lots of different ways, but yeah.
My choir director spelled it K-A-R-I-N.
Oh.
Even different yet.
Yeah. So many different spellings. Who knew? Expanding our horizons all the time.
Parents that want their kids to always have names misspelled.
And this last tweet from Mariah. Mitch, would you like to grab this one?
Sure. This is from at Mariah Lovegood, who wrote, "I was waiting for the poll to vote for watching One in One." I think we're referencing watching Angel's 118 and 119 back-to-back. And she said, "So I'm so happy. FYI, I'm a super fan. I want to relive Buffy and Angel as if they were both airing." Meaning, yes, guys, we will be watching. Karen, is this Forevermore? Is this like a solid, super duper lewd thing? It is
super lewd.
So one episode of Buffy.
It has been stapled in.
One episode of Angel. That's it. We will never be doing doubles together, apparently.
Nope.
I'm not a super fan to decide that. I don't know. But
it was a good experiment, and yeah. I think that it is nice to spend a little more time focusing on that core unit rather than having to break the episodes up. But I personally really like the structure of always having it be the same, and I also like the fact that we are watching it as if they were airing. And I'm not gonna lie, a little bit of it is because I'm vindictive and I like making the newbies wait a week in between.
You wouldn't.
I have a skull candle. It's always going to be my excuse now. Last comment is from Hypable, from Emmy. And Kristen, would you like to read this?
Sure, yes. Emmy says, "I love 5x5 and Eternity, but that is for next week. which I think it was last week. Oh, well, so much. Faith's dynamic with Wesley in 5x5 is so interesting, and her relationship with Angel is one of my favorites. That last scene in 5x5 kills me every time. Also, I actually like Where the Wild Things Are. It's totally weird and reinforces the whole sex is bad idea that Buffy the Vampire Slayer has going on, but I still like it. Also, even as a lesbian, that Giles scene at the cafe does things to me.
Reach.
That is true, though, that it really does reinforce the whole sex is bad idea.
Oh, yeah. Except at the end, they both enjoyed it. They, like...
Yeah.
The people who were having sex were like, it was pretty great.
Yeah. It's a wonder anybody does on this show, though. God.
Yeah, it's like, sucks for everybody else, but it was good for us, so... Whatever.
All right, and we're going to end the episode on some Mitch's musings and Kristen's contemplations. Remember, guys, I'm saying this specifically to our newbies, if you know something, don't spoil it, just in case, because there are some spoilery things on Netflix, so try to avoid it if you can. But if you don't know anything, please just guess away. Buffy 419 is called New Moon Rising, and Angel 119 is called Sanctuary. So... Mitch, why don't you start us off, and Kristen, let us know if you have anything to add.
I can only give a joke for New Moon Rising because I actually know what happens, unfortunately, because it's just the image is, like, pasted everywhere on the internet of what this episode is when I was looking up for 418, because it's always, like, the next chronologically. So I'm going to just say that New Moon Rising is the wonderful little pocket episode where... Edward leaves Bella for a bit, and Jacob comes back into the forefront. That's what happens there.
I knew you were going to make a Jacob Black joke. I knew it was coming.
Kristen, do you have any, like... Because you haven't been spoiled like I have from Buffy World, right?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, okay. I don't know anything, but considering the gravitas and the methods to which Karen has implemented to keep me from seeing anything about 419.
Good.
And the title, this is the first time I'm seeing the title, and seeing that it is called New Moon Rising, I'm actually very excited because, I mean, Oz? Please, please. Like, it makes me hope that somehow, some way, we see Oz again, because it's about the moon, and he is the moon, and everything involving the moon for me in this show. So, I have no idea, but that's, cross my fingers. Okay, and then Angel is 119 Sanctuary.
I don't have a clue.
It's the second part, so we know that it's gonna involve Faith, and we know, you know, considering how into all of this Wolfram and Hart is kind of mixed in, it makes me think that maybe Angel provides, like, a sanctuary for Faith as Wolfram and Hart, like, tries to pull her back in to, like, use her for, not necessarily to kill Angel anymore, but, like, they try to hold her to whatever contract they tried to get her to sign.
Yeah, likely. Yeah, it makes more sense. I was in the mindset of, like some kind of holy sanctuary. Like, we're going to get into something supernatural with needing, like, reprise from demons. So you're finding something, like, heavenly, I guess.
Yeah.
Both good guesses. Both good guesses. We will just have to see what happens. But for now, this is it. And we hope you guys will tune in again next week for our discussion on these two episodes. So until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
I did, and I'm starting to get to the point where... Sorry, my cat is scratching the post. I was, like, trying to mute around that. Stop it. They get so antsy when I'm podcasting. I'm the worst today. You done? You done scratching? Was that good? You almost done? Oh, my God. Today's a
so many bloopers day. This week.
What to choose? What to choose?